Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Lovely to be here. So today I want to talk about a passage from the Genjo Koan, which is one of the central texts of Soto Zen Buddhism, written by a fellow named Dogen Zenji about 800 years ago, which means it will probably be almost incomprehensible. But hopefully, by talking about it, we can find something useful in this. So I think I'll just read the passage first. This is the first three lines of Genjo Koan. As all dharmas are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice and birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. As the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient beings, no birth and death. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Thus, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings, and Buddhas. So how do we do on the incomprehensibility scale there?
Clear.
This text is challenging. Dogen's audience for this probably was intended to be monks, but I think there's some wisdom in here for us. So I could sum up this, if I was going to make a brief summary, as saying there are, we could look at the world as if each thing is Buddha. And when we say Buddha, I'll talk about that a little more, but basically this is intended to evoke a very, very positive feeling. Each thing you meet, wow, wonderful. As Hongzhi says, each thing is inherently wondrous and miraculous. So this is a view that he starts with. Wow, that would be a pleasant way to approach life. Have you ever perhaps encountered something and not thought, oh, this is wondrous and miraculous? So this is the first view he presents. Second view, as the myriad things are without an abiding self, is something like, if you really look at things carefully, you'll see that there's nothing that exists separately from everything else. Nothing that has its own inherent abiding self-existence. So, in shorthand, we just say there are no things. Experience is, although we try and understand it and comprehend it and break it down, is essentially beyond any kind of comprehension. It's not always as clear why that is a way of looking at things that is helpful. But hopefully I can make a case for its value today. And third, the Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and one. So he says, all right, well, that's cool. Everything's Buddha. Nothing exists. What's going on? Leap clear. These are just ideas. Leap clear of any idea that you have of anything. And when you leap clear, Buddha's instruction for how, or Dogen's instruction for how to leap clear is by doing what you're doing right now wholeheartedly. So we leap clear by jumping in. I got that way of phrasing that because I sent the text for the bulletin to Kimberly, our administrative director, and it said, yes, no, yes, leaping clear. And she sent a response that said, thanks for jumping in, Ben. So we have a good team here. So Dogen says, leap clear. Leap clear of suffering. That's what Buddhism is about. Leaping clear of suffering by completely entering suffering. So the first line, as all dharmas are Buddha Dharma. As all dharmas are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice and birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. So it's already confusing within the first six words. many of you, I'm sure, know, but many of you don't. There are many definitions of the word dharma. Most people are probably familiar with the definition that it's a teaching or a path. And, you know, in India, 2,500 years ago when the Buddha was around, there was all kinds of people running around presenting their dharmas, which were their teachings, their methods for the way one should live, essentially. And in Buddhism, when we talk about Buddhist teaching, that's usually written with a big D, dharma, our teaching, you know, woo. Another important meaning of dharma, and why these two very central ideas in Buddhism don't get two words is very strange to me. Like, why didn't someone think about 2,500 years ago, you know, if we just got another word for this, it would be much less confusing. But anyway, they didn't do that. So a dharma with a small d is best defined as an experiential moment. And so the tiniest moment of experience. And for those of us who've done some meditation practice, perhaps there have been times when your mind became quiet enough that instead of a stream of narrative, instead of experiencing life as just thinking about something that's going to happen or did happen or that you're doing, you just experienced things just popping up, colors, sounds, sensations in the body, thoughts that just emerge and disappear. So at this particulate level of experience, these are called dharmas. And this is a useful thing to experience because it helps us break free, it helps us leap clear of the fixation on our conditioned narratives, which do cause some of us some aggravation. Maybe it's just me, I don't know. So, he says all dharmas with a small d are the Buddha Dharma. So he says, each one of these tiny little particles of experience is Buddha teaching. Now, some of you may not have any particular affection for Buddhism. You just walked in because we happened to be along the lake. And you know, well, I don't know much about Buddha Dharma. But, you know, his audience here was Buddhists who were really pretty devoted to this in a culture where Buddhism was, you know, really, really highly valued. So basically he's saying each thing that you experience is the ultimate, most valuable, beautiful, amazing thing you can imagine. Wow. All right. That sounds good. I'm not sure I feel that way all the time, but he says, as all dharmas are Buddha dharmas. So he says, given that this is the case, as if we all assumed it was true, he says, there is delusion and realization. So there is, in Buddhism, especially in early Buddhism, we have the idea that people are deluded, they can practice, and then they have realization, and they're free from suffering. So he says, okay, given that each thing is Buddha, we have this truth that people are deluded, they can be completely free from suffering through realization. He says there's delusion and realization, there's practice, that's meditating and being kind, essentially, the essence of Buddhism, meditation and kindness. Birth and death, things come and go. He says, yeah, you can see it, right? And there are Buddhas and sentient beings. Which one are we? So he's saying, if we take it that everything and each thing is Buddha, that is the basis on which we can say that things exist. So he doesn't say things just exist in a conventional sense. He says they exist because they are Buddha. So that sounds perhaps hard to believe or grasp. Generally speaking, these kind of teachings seem to emerge from the teacher's experience. So this is a truth that is felt And the teaching is intended, I think, here as much as anything to be felt. To be felt. Can you take it into your heart, the possibility that when you see things and say, ah, microphone, you can be like, Buddha! It's so great to see you. Wow. I'm really grateful. Wow. Well, that seems like a silly way to be, but would it be that bad? And might there be some circumstances where you meet things and you don't have that attitude, where if you did, there might be some opening, some room for some love and some compassion and some connection to flow that is absent from your conscious experience. So as much as this could be taken as a philosophical assertion, principally I think it is intended to be an encouragement to approach life with a boundless appreciation for what comes into experience. And, oh, I should be clear. I want to say this, another just definitional thing. So he says all dharmas are Buddha dharma. You know, Buddha also, like dharma, has a multiplicity of definitions. And oftentimes when we say Buddha, we're talking about a man who lived like 2,500 years ago. He devoted himself to trying to alleviate suffering. And he felt like he had alleviated suffering within himself and wanted to teach other people how to have the same experience. But here, when Dogen says all dharmas are Buddha dharma, he's not saying each thing is telling you what the Buddha said, although he also is saying that. But basically, Buddha's great realization, the point at which he claimed, he was just like, there's no dissatisfaction whatsoever. I'm welcoming everything. Was the moment at which he just saw through the idea that he was separate from everything else. He saw through the idea that he was separate from everything else. And if you look at your experience and you're like me, if you do a lot of meditation, you'll be like, well, I keep hearing this Buddhist teaching that I'm not separate from other things, but I sure feel like I am. I sure feel like I am. And even when I feel really connected, I'm like really connected, but I'm like, it still feels like there's something observing here most of the time. Like, what is that? It's a habit. It's a habit we have. Everybody here probably has the habit of thinking that they're separate from the universe. But you know, you can overcome habits. It's quite possible. I've overcome a lot of rather practical and unpleasant habits. But this one, of not being able to see the totality of your connection to everything, can be overcome. And so Buddha sometimes, in this type of discourse, and really the way Dogen is using it here, is to say, is just the perfect totality manifestationness of everything doing its everythingness, or something like that. That's not actually the way Dogen put it precisely, but you get the idea, because what Buddha was he was a guy named Siddhartha, but then people called him the Buddha, and the difference between Siddhartha and the Buddha was the Buddha wasn't a person. He was everything. Now, obviously, he was a person. He was just a guy teaching. But when you talk to him about it, he'd be like, it's just this happening. You know, he's not. He saw through the separation. So when we talk about Buddha, we just talk about non-separateness. And this is, for those of you taking notes, it's called the Dharmakaya body of the Buddha. So the Dharmakaya body is just like a guy sitting here. And when you talk about Buddha with this big, vast, infinite term, that's what we call the Dharmakaya. So the next time you're at Sesshin and you're chanting and you go, Dharmakaya, you could be like, oh, I know what that is. Then you should go back to breathing. So this view is just here to encourage you to see your connection to everything, to feel intimacy, extremely highly valued in the Zen tradition, intimacy with what is, intimacy with the moment. If you see that Dharma and you see its Buddha nature, there's some room for you to really feel a connection. Because you are Buddha. That experience you might have of thinking, oh, I'm separate, that experience itself is Buddha. It's not something separate from everything else. That's just the universe manifesting itself. This is very similar to a big religious sensibility movement in the last couple hundred years, which is called pantheism. Which, if you believe in God, you just say everything is God. Well, I just said God, and half the people in here were like, "Oh God, not this." But that's okay. Maybe a few of them were like, "Yeah, God, whatever." We all have our own associations with different words. They're just words. But I read a story about a guy who was an alcoholic with a terrible life, and then he started doing the 12 steps. 12 steps are very similar to Buddhism in that essentially Buddhism and the 12 steps are a set of practices conducive to the alleviation of suffering. So he's doing his 12 steps, and he had this guy who was helping him a lot, and they went to this group together all the time, and it was like, I'm being saved, it's really good. And then his best friend in the group that he went to that was saving his life started sleeping with his wife, who left him for the guy. And he was unhappy about this. He was not responding to it thinking, this moment of experience is Buddha. But he had heard somewhere someone talk about how it was really great to just view each thing you meet as God. And his particular practice involved a conception of a deity that supported him. So he was like, okay, this sucks. Let's try something else. So he just started going through, according to the story that he wrote, he just started going through life as much as he could, all day, he was just like, oh, you're God. That's God. This is God. You know, he's driving the car. Wow, God. God's here. My hands are God. That other driver is God. Oatmeal. God. I love oatmeal. And so he did this, and he was like, wow, he claimed through doing this to completely walk away from this incredible sense of suffering he had about the loss of his wife, his friend, the betrayal, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And he said it was just through breaking through, in a way, just the negativity. So really, by just invoking this incredibly positive image over and over, it did something to his heart. Let's try this. I would like everyone to just take a minute to think about something that happens with some frequency that is dissatisfying to them. Could be extremely dissatisfying. You know, maybe where do the really dissatisfying things often happen? Family, intimate relationships, jobs, money. Just think about something like this for a second and call it into your mind. And then just imagine you're in, say, the situation where this difficulty is evoked the most. You'd even close your eyes and just picture this situation. And just thinking about it may bring up unpleasant feelings. So now, just as each thing comes into your mind, as we're sitting here, just think, that's Buddha. That's Buddha. Maybe you hear some words that you repeat in this story that you've constructed about this unpleasant experience, and just think, that's Buddha. You might think, how the heck could that be Buddha? That's Buddha. How the heck could that be Buddha is Buddha. Each thing in this situation is the universe manifesting itself in the way it happens to be manifesting itself. That's what is. There's not something other than what is. Okay. So, this little game we just played is something you can do. You can just think, oh, this is Buddha. You know, I came here, I was pretty damn grumpy when I got here. A couple people would just say to me, you are Buddha. And I was like, well, no. No. You might be. Everyone else might be. Not me. Not this guy. But you know, it still was helpful. It still was helpful. Second line. Do you realize how long it would take to read the Genjo Koan? It's only 3 pages. As the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddhas, no sentient beings, no birth, no death. Well, I for one can attest that this idea that there is no delusion is a fallacy. Well, that's pretty weird. No sentient being. I mean, don't we all feel pretty sentient here? So this is a difficult one to get at. And it's really central to Mahayana Buddhism, which is basically Buddhism, most Buddhism after about 2,000 years ago. And it exists in the earliest Buddhism, too. It's just not as emphasized as much. But it comes out of the experience of meditation practice. It also comes out of philosophical inquiry. But here, in our tradition, most importantly, it comes from direct experience of looking at things. And if you look closely, you'll see that there's nothing that lasts exactly in and of itself. And there's nothing that exists that in and of itself that isn't being constantly influenced by everything around it. You know, even if many of us can see this temple bell, we say, well, that's just the bell. But actually, what we're seeing is light. You know, you never actually see an object. You see a reflection of light. But you don't see a reflection of light because you see an object. And of course, you don't see either of those things because what you're experiencing is you're experiencing an inverted reflection on the back of a retina, which is then transferred into some complex system of activity in here. So here I'm using like a scientific way of talking about how things don't have a separate abiding self. And there's lots of ways to talk about this. So if you find it confusing, you can come back here and someone will talk about it in a way that hopefully is more helpful. But there are many ways. But mostly we just can see it. You can see how everything is constantly changing and interacting. And you see this just by sitting zazen, the essence of our practice here. And this view is most, for those of you who like this sort of thing, the Madhyamaka school of Buddhism is the one that emphasizes this view. Nagarjuna is the principal philosopher that propounds it. Prajnaparamita texts are The Prajnaparamita text, the Heart Sutra, is the one we chant here in the mornings during the week. And that one basically says, there's none of this stuff that you think is really here. They're just ideas that you have. You think, oh yeah, there's a microphone here. But really, there's an absolutely incomprehensible number of particles interacting in a way that, you know, some scientists will go, oh, we figured it out, they're atoms. And then another one will go, no, they're quanta. And in fact, the quantum particles in this microphone, many of them are located in multiple places at the same time. I'm pretty sure physicists in 50 years are going to figure out some other thing that doesn't make any sense to confuse us with. But anyway, these Prajnaparamita said, no! None of these ideas, none of these things that you think are real are essentially real. They're just ideas that you have about your experience that you're trying to compartmentalize so you can try and figure out how to use the universe in a way to get it to be the way you want it to. Prajnaparamita text says, trying to use the universe to get it to be the way you want it to is never going to work. It's never going to work, folks. Has it been satisfying for us so far? I mean, occasionally it's satisfying. Yes, I got my oatmeal. That's good. But then, you know, the next I turn around and I didn't get what I wanted. Someone is saying to me something I really don't want to hear. So we say these ideas that you have that you're using unconsciously, that we use unconsciously, to try and manipulate the universe to get what we want, it's a failing battle. What if you just gave up and you were able to let go of all this figuring out and trying to control and you just were here? You were just here in your life. Well, what Prajnaparamita text says is Bodhisvaha, which means enlightenment. Wow! That's the last line of the sutra. Wow! The Prajnaparamita mantra is gate gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha. Variously translated, but one of my favorites is gone, gone, gone beyond, way beyond going beyond. Enlightenment, wow! Nagarjuna has this different approach. He calls it, he says one positive thing in one of his biggest tracts, because he's just saying, he's just trying to cut through your ideas, cut through, and then at one point he says, you know what happens when you do all this cutting through? You know what happens when you cut through all your ideas, divisions? You stop seeing things as being a bunch of discrete elements that you believe are real, and just live in what's arising without preconceptions. He calls it the peaceful. And for those of us who've done a lot of meditation practice, I think we might just know the flavor of this. I do, of the peaceful. Profoundly peaceful sometimes. But also of wow, wow. Sometimes Tim will do teishos during sesshin. So a teisho is just kind of a spontaneous expression of God knows what. I don't know, something helpful. Well, in the books they say a teisho is a spontaneous expression of the teacher's realization of emptiness. Well, I don't know what he's doing, but sometimes they make a lot of sense. But I remember one time I was sitting here doing zazen for several days, and towards the end of the day, Tim was talking about something for a few minutes, and then he just said, "Wow, wow, wow," and I was like, "Yeah, that's cool. I get that. I'm looking at a wall." I've been looking at a wall for 6 hours a day for 3 days. Wow! I don't know. Wow is I don't know. don't know what's going on. I haven't got this figured out. Wow. And this view that things are not things, or that once you put a label on a thing, what if you always knew that once you put a label on a thing, if there was a little part of you that remembered that it's not true? It's just an idea that you're using. Every single label you have for anything is just an idea you're using, hopefully in a way that is conducive to the alleviation of suffering. Because amazing things can happen. A openness. So let's try another thing here. Let's just see if I like this closing the eyes. This is fun. So what if you don't mind, or if you want to, you can close your eyes and just try and evoke again perhaps the same circumstance that comes up in your life where you don't like it. Maybe there's anger or sadness, shame, maybe all of them. I don't know what. You know what you don't like. So just bring in your mind's eye yourself into that situation. And then just imagine what it would be like to be there if you could see completely through everything about that situation that you believed to be true. That you were separate from whatever it was that was bothering you. That whatever way you thought things should be was really the way it should be. That you needed to try and fix this situation. What if perhaps if it's a situation where people are speaking, instead of trying to figure things out, you could just deeply listen. What if whatever story your mind keeps telling you about this now, and when you're in that situation, if you just realized it was just a story? So, you can open your eyes if you want to. This one's a little harder to... it's a little more fun to just think everything's Buddha, maybe. Because we have fear, you know? So the reason we build up these stories is to defend ourselves. And we tend to feel like we need to do that. And there are circumstances, and it's important to take care of yourself. If you're in a dangerous situation, to move yourself into a non-dangerous situation. But the activity of the mind that is trying to protect us by figuring things out and create a narrative and then try and fix it, it's just overdoing its job. It's overdoing its job. And although this little thought experiment may not have brought a lot of peace into your heart, or maybe it did, it's worth continuing to consider, because there's an enormous freedom available in letting go of what you think is right. Not permanently. I'm not saying abandon your values, I'm saying just have the ability to occasionally just realize, wow, maybe I got to figure some stuff out, but I could just be here in my life. Some of the time, just be here. Be here in this, whatever it is, ness. Third line of the Genjo Koan. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. And there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. So first he says, insofar as everything is Buddha, there's stuff. And then he says, well, insofar as nothing really exists, and that's just preconceptions that we have that's separating things, nothing exists. And here he says, the Buddha way is to leap clear. And so there are things. This is a particularly Dogenish thing to do, because if you were creating a logical argument, you'd say, there are things, there are not things. Because everything's Buddha, there are things. And because there are not things, there are no things. And now, leaping clear of what? He says many and one, which is kind of confusing, because I would have said, like, many and none. So, Dogen, generally speaking, is not trying to provide a place for us to land. And for some people, that might make Soto Zen Buddhism kind of difficult. Because some people, you know, they come here and they, I just need a place to land, man. You know, people need a place to land. And Dogen knows that. He starts this by saying, here's a place to land. Land on everything is perfect and beautiful. Land there. And that may be a good place for you to land right now. Land on your cushion and land in your breath. Land in your breath. Leap clear and land in your breath. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Like I say, this could be interpreted in a lot of ways. But basically, I feel like he's saying, okay, these two views are great, and we can leap completely clear of them. People will say, oh, this view that nothing exists and that I'm seeing through all my preconceptions is a viewless view. I'm just going to see through everything, and I'm going to be free. But the thing is, if you start doing that, pretty soon, start getting a little of this going on. Can't see this on the microphone, folks. I'm feeling pretty proud, though, seeing through everything, being beyond it all. You got to leap clear of that, friends. Leap clear of that, too. That's no place to land. That's no place to land, because you can get stuck in a sort of a quiescence or withdrawal. And this tradition is not about quiescence, and it is not about withdrawal. We leap clear by jumping in. Jumping in to this moment of our lives. And we practice this leaping clear and jumping in sitting. Sitting. Because when we sit, don't sometimes you just have the feeling that you've stepped aside from the difficulties of your life, from the relentlessness of your thinking? But at the same time, even though that seems to be what we're, it feels like that many times, it's also what we're doing is we're just completely here. Hopefully, I mean, that's our practice, to be here with whatever's here, with it, whether it's just, wow, deep breath after deep breath, or, wow, relentless, neurotic, obsessive thinking. That I'm the only one that's ever happened to doing Zazen, I know. Whatever it is, just being here with it, completely jumping in to this moment of experience. And he says, you know, there's this view of all things is Buddha. There's this view of nothing is here. But when we leap clear, we're back where we started, in a sense. Before we started having all these crazy ideas about what experience is, and it's just stuff. But it's stuff to take care of. And perhaps by viewing things in this very positive light, or seeing through our ideas about them, through the path of negation, the via negativa, then we are actually much more intimate with them. We become more and more intimate with them. So, koan, generally, it means technically public case, but a koan is generally thought to be a question, sort of an unresolvable question. And in this text is called the Genjo Koan. So, the question, I'll rephrase the Genjo Koan. Without denying that we are here, without denying ourselves, without believing our ideas about ourselves, without being caught by our ideas about things, without ignoring our total dependence on others, our dependence on everything else in the universe, every moment, without missing that in this moment, we are the realization of everything realizing itself. How do we choose to live? So that concludes my talk. And I would like to invite comments or questions.
Hi, Ben. I have a comment. I would just like to say one thing, if I may.
Yes.
I'd like to just say, wow.
If you say it two times, you get to be the head teacher.
Oh, is it that simple?
Anyone else?
I've got one thing. It's funny to me, like, even if it's funny, it's interesting, like, how the more I see how deluded and egocentric my life is, like, how, like, right now it seems really heavy, you know, but, you know, coming here, I get a lot of encouragement that, you know, I gotta stop trying to hold back, you know, like jumping in is the only way. And, you know, I have to teach myself that every day, you know, but it's still much better than sitting there thinking I'm better than everybody and harping on them. That's a huge thing that I found, you know, put me down a very negative path for a really long time. I hope to, you know, keep coming here and having more of that lifted off me. Sometimes it's not easy. Stepping through all that crap.
I don't know if you guys could hear that, but you're just talking about how, I think how doing this practice has provided some freedom from some tendencies that cause suffering, you know, judging people. But the problem is that then you do your meditation and you do this and then you are actually seeing all this stuff that you do that causes harm, and that's painful. It's painful. And it's not uncommon. I don't think it's uncommon at all. You know, that's why we have Sangha. We have a community, because then we can all go, oh yeah, I do that too. I know what that's like. But it's a brave and important kind of work. Because human beings take their habituated, their harmful tendencies, and they carry them through life. And it creates so much chaos in the world. So if you're willing to just put some time into seeing through those and stepping up in a way that's more connected and more helpful, I mean, it's an amazing thing for a person to do, I think.
I have children, and listening to them, I have a child that leaps in, and she's done. And she leaps into life, and she leaps into everything she does, wholeheartedly. She has no delusion. And then I have a child who's 13 who is starting to change from that leaping in. She's starting to suffer. And it reminds me of my child and what happened in my journey that took me from that living every moment, experiencing the universe and looking in, to slowly suffering. And it's been a really interesting time.
Yeah, we lose something when we grow up. But one model for looking at Buddhist practice, it's just one model. It's basically that, you know, you have all this freedom of mind when you're incredibly young, and then you have to organize the world. You have to make labels and figure all kinds of stuff out. And then at a certain point, many people will just stay in that thing. But through Buddhism, we do have the opportunity to go, oh, what if we dismantle the labels? Or at least, not completely dismantle them, but take some time to practice seeing through them. So we're not caught by the own, by those things that we used as a process of development. But yeah, I'm glad I'm not a 13-year-old girl. Not generally recorded as the apex of human experience.